Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Real Blend, a podcast that does the Kessel Run in 11 parsecs every single time.
Hey.
Actually, we're a live movie podcast that airs on Cinema Blend's Facebook page and then can be downloaded everywhere the popular podcasts can be found. My name is Sean O'Connell, and while I usually take this time to remind you guys all about our Twitter page, which is at Real Blend, or about the iTunes page where you can rate and review us, there is simply too much show today for me to waste on any of that. We have a major, major guest who we are very, very excited to get to. First, of course, we say hello to my illustrious Real Blend co-hosts. Kevin McCarthy is the entertainment reporter for Fox 5 in Washington, D.C.
So
Kevin,
handsome.
How are you, sir? And hey, Jake. Good. Oh, Kevin, I'm sorry. Please, say hello.
No, I was just going to say, awesome to talk to you, Sean, and I like your Star Wars shirt. That's a cool one.
I'm going to Solo in a few hours, so I'm dressed for that. And Jake Hamilton is the entertainment reporter for Fox 32 in Chicago. Jake, hello.
Hey, what's up, man? I'm also going to Solo in a few hours. Round two this time.
Round two for you. Stop rubbing in my face. And when I tell you we have a jam-packed show, I am not exaggerating. This weekend, a whole heck of a lot of you went to go see Deadpool 2. The sequel banked more than $300 million in global ticket sales, and the movie would not exist if our guest today, Mr. Rob Liefeld, didn't create the foul-mouthed and hilarious mercenary for hire. So on the heels of Deadpool 2's enormous success, it brings us great pleasure to welcome Rob Liefeld to Real Blend.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me, guys. Thank you.
We are so happy that you're here with us, and we're so happy that it's right on the heels of the film opening and the enormous success, and we want to dive into spoilers and talk about everything that you know about the creative process for the sequel. So if you guys have questions, too, if you happen to be listening on the Facebook page, if you're watching on the feed and have comments or questions down below, drop them in there. Producer Gabe will get them to us, and we will get to Rob. But before we get to Deadpool, because we normally do news, and I was going to cut news short, and we were going to dive right into Deadpool chatter, but then news broke today that I need Rob's comments on, his analysis on.
Yeah.
We know there's a Spider-Man Homecoming sequel coming.
How? He's dead.
Well, yes, yeah. That's going to be strange for them to market this movie with a suddenly deceased Spider-Man. But we hear today that Mysterio is going to be the villain in Spider-Man Homecoming 2. Now, not confirmed, you know, in talks, but they want Jake Gyllenhaal for Mysterio. Rob, first off, is Mysterio a good villain for the next Spider-Man movie? And what are your thoughts on maybe Gyllenhaal's casting?
You know what? I love Mysterio. Always have. You know, really, Mysterio and Kraven are like the last of the great Spider-Man villains to tap. It would be great if they were both in there. I don't know why I was totally sold on Kraven. Maybe he's still there. Maybe he's not. Mysterio is fantastic. More importantly, Jake Gyllenhaal is just an amazing actor, an amazing talent, an amazing present. Funny thing is, I'm not trying to name drop. Ryan Reynolds himself, actually, and Jake are obviously very good friends from life and everything. And Ryan had invited me and my wife to a screening supporting Jake's movie Boston Strong. I think it came out last year. And, you know, because they were trying to get some Academy buzz. It was like a private screening that Ryan was showing for his friend Jake. So I got to meet them both. And I was sitting there going, I wonder when Jake is going to sign on to the superhero world. I did not want to ask him about Batman because that was right when, I think about 9 months ago, some of that Jake is being considered for Batman. But yeah. I think it's just today, it's just, it's fun to hear that he is now, he's in. I mean, I feel like if we're reading about this and they waited till today to post it, which I think is strategic 3 to 4 weeks after Infinity War, I mean, it's probably a done deal. And I think it's great. And it only speaks to the level of talent that is coming to these. And I can't wait to see how, you know, how they introduce him, how they pull him off. But you guys already said it. I'm like, hey, what do you mean there's a Spider-Man sequel, guys? Come on.
Right. Yeah.
I told my kids when we left Infinity War, they're like, Dad, what do you think? I said, I think you should avoid the on-set photos of Spider-Man 2 all summer long. Because otherwise, it's a little harder to buy into this movie, right?
Rob, I saw you at the Avengers premiere. I met your son. It was a great night.
Great seeing you always.
It's always great to see you. And I feel like everyone was in pure shock when that film ended. Yes. As somebody who is involved in comic books and clearly mm-hmm. has created some of the greatest characters of all time, do you have any theories in your mind about what they might do to bring these characters back? Do you have an idea of, like, I've heard theories from, I hope they don't do the stupid time stone. I don't want them to rewind it. I want them, maybe, like, there's some quantum realm elements. Do you have any idea of what they might do with it?
Okay, have you heard the theory that everyone that faded is alive and the people that are there are dead? Have you heard that one?
What?
No. I believe that one. I think what? If you look at who disappeared.
I'm telling you right now, that's what I have subscribed to. Yeah. That everyone that faded, they actually left the, that's them being removed from the dead realm. And I mean, look, man, it sucks so bad because like so many shows like Lost, like True Detective, the theories might turn out to be better than what we get. And it happens a lot because theories are great.
I liked Lost.
But no, me too. But we are the two guys. Things I will fight for in my life. Kobe Bryant. The Lost finale.
Yeah.
But I love that theory that everyone that peeled away is actually, you've got it in reverse. They're living, and everyone we saw at the end who we think is safe is dead with Thanos. But anyway,
wow.
That's what I'm hoping for. If either way, the people who are gone on either side, Kevin, I believe that we're going to see them in some lavender-tinted realm, pink right. realm. I think they're all going to be gathered together and have to process their way out. Now, cut to the Russo brothers on the couch laughing, somehow seeing this right now going, that Liefeld is a moron. Look, man, I'm just putting it out there like everybody else. I have no idea what's going to happen. I
Rob,
do. Yeah.
But what's interesting is I was on the bus to the Deadpool 2 screening. And I was talking to a buddy of mine who was sitting in front of me, and he had this theory. I can't remember. Actually, I was talking to a buddy of mine named Dan, and his friend next to him had this theory about the quantum realm, and that in Ant-Man and the Wasp, we may or may not find out that maybe that's where they went, and that's where that maybe is an idea of how they have to save them, and maybe Tony and Cap have to sacrifice themselves. I've heard that theory too, which is actually interesting. I just don't know if that's even possible to do.
If that's true, then they are wizards on another level yeah. with what they're doing. I mean, I just, you know, I'd like to think that Ant-Man and the Wasp, I got to be honest, it's one of the things that I thought would benefit Deadpool was that it was just its own self-contained story. And we've had so many sagas lately that we invest in these chapters and live from the next chapter to the next chapter. And look, Marvel has made a brilliant, look, I can go on all day long complimenting what Kevin Feige and everybody is there done. I tell my kids, you realize you're not going to see an Avengers movie or a Black Panther movie or a Captain. You're going to see the next chapter in the expanded Marvel saga. That's what they've done to their universe. That's why we all show up. I would love for Ant-Man and the Wasp to be just its own self-contained thing. Cause dude, I need it. Honestly, aren't we all Infinity War? It screwed me up, man. I knew I'd be devastated. I did not know I would be so confused.
No.
Yeah. So, you know, confused and devastated, not a good look. Huh. Not a good
we were
look.
All shocked. Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, we had Rob on because we want to talk Deadpool 2. And we want to talk. And maybe this is what, Rob, is that why you created a hero who How can Deadpool be killed? Is there any way that
No, look. I've been really I appreciate what you said at the beginning too, because I got to be honest, man. I read a lot of just flat out bullshit. if Deadpool with his time control machine goes back and shoots me in the head, Deadpool's done. You can shoot anyone else. He came from my mind, formed onto the page. The way Marvel Comics does their contracts is whoever scripts the book or help, then they get a piece. I was an awesome lottery ticket to so many people for so long. But the creative force behind the turnaround of the New Mutants, the creation of X-Force, all those characters, the guy you're talking to, the guy who has the contracts back in 1991 to back it up. That said, introducing him, it was inevitable. He was a Marvel character, and he would have versions of him, just as what I'm leading up to, Wolverine, who was my inspiration. Look, guys, that behind me is that spinner rack. And when I was a kid, the book that I ignored all the time was the X-Men. It was a boring book. If anyone who has video of me at a convention in the last 6 years, and I howled in Deadpool because I pick on one character, I pick on one X-Men character all the time, and he was part of the original lineup. But I tell people all the time that the X-Men, the original five X-Men, were very boring. Now, they as your viewers may or may not know, they were canceled. They were ultimately canceled. They stopped producing new X-Men comics. And for 3.5 years, the book was just reprints. They just reprinted the existing, and they didn't have the new X-Men characters. In 1975, depending on what story you believe, there's a lot of great legends of why this team was brought together. And the legend is, and it's in some Marvel history books, that they wanted to have an international comic book. So they said, well, the X-Men is currently not being used. And that's why Storm is African, Nightcrawler is German. They took Wolverine, who was in the Hulk briefly, is Canadian. Colossus is Russian. They wanted to build out their international appeal. Well, that book lands, and Wolverine from that day, actually from that day in Hulk all the way through, became my very favorite character. The healing factor, the Weapon X, all the background.
Yeah.
So when I created Deadpool, look, I've told people I went and saw Twins, and for the, your viewers, you don't know what that was. Arnold Schwarzenegger, biggest movie star on the planet at the time,
Danny DeVito.
Stars with Danny DeVito, and you guys, the marketing. I got to show you this. My wife, when I was a kid, stole this from me. We were just dating. That's me. And my twin standee. She ran out of the theater with that. Into the car, the getaway car, and she said that she was being tailed. So that movie meant a lot to me. Arnold and Danny, and at the end of the movie, because it's the big question, how are they twins? How are these guys? And it's the journey they go on, and the doctor finally says to Arnold, well, you're the good stuff. And then he says, and you're the all the genetic material refined. And Danny DeVito says, but what am I? And he goes, you are the crap. And David goes, I'm the crap. And Schwarzenegger goes, you're the crap. You're the crap. I'm so sorry. And you go, and I said, I got it. Wolverine in this scenario is Arnold. And because he's Weapon X, Weapon 10. I said, Marvel, do we have this correct? Weapon X is Roman numeral 10? They said, yes. I said, and we've seen not 1 through 9? They said, no, we haven't seen 1 through 9. I said, then Deadpool is the guy right before. He's the Danny DeVito. He's burned. He's scarred. He looks like shit. It's because they hadn't refined it yet. And Marvel, by that time, because of the success of Cable and the New Mutants, they said, I kid you not. They were like, yeah, whatever, go with it. Yeah, cool. Okay, whatever you want. I said, so I can tie him to Wolverine, my favorite character of all time? Yeah, good. Okay, fine. And honestly, let's be honest, man. Because of that, he's in Wolverine Origins.
Yeah.
Because they're connected, when they did a Wolverine solo movie, they include Deadpool, which sets us on this journey. But no, I mean, the great thing is I just wanted to have this kind of – And say that at that point, the reason we haven't seen Weapon 1 through 9 is because they all got screwed up and they're batshit crazy. And it turned Deadpool crazy. And what he did is he used his powers that he created, got in the process to be a mercenary and a contract killer. And so, and I told Marvel, because Spider-Man at the time was very dark. Everyone had taken him to the Frank Miller Dark Knight place. Everybody who wanted it, they wanted to do to Spider-Man what they did to Dark Knight. And when I was growing up on this spinner rack, the Spider-Man that I grew up reading was a smartass. He made jokes when he hit you, it was always one-liners. And I figured, I don't need another straight guy, a straight man. I have that in Cable. So opposite him, we designed Deadpool. He took most male Marvel publishing ever had on a character in 15 years. And that's why Deadpool is in X-Force number 2. Between those two appearances also, he sold 2.5 million copies. That was when the audience was at the absolute massive, you know, expansion. So I'll take a breath and you can gather and ask me your next question, because I talk a lot.
In regards to Sean's question, though, about whether or not Deadpool can die, on top of that...
Healing factor. Healing factor.
Right, right.
No, he cannot die.
So there's two parts to that. So my wife and I were watching the sequel, and she was wondering, and I guess we're in spoiler territory...
Hold on. Let me say that out loud for people who are watching the Facebook feed who maybe stumbled into this. We are going to get into Deadpool 2 spoilers. Rob, how many times have you seen it?
I saw it the sixth time last Friday night. Yeah.
Awesome.
Six times.
Good. We're going to ask specific things about the movie.
Yeah. And look, I'll say it right now. People, just turn it off if you haven't seen it. Don't go any further. We want to be responsible. I hate spoilers.
Right.
There's way too many of them. There's way too many of them out there.
None of us want to ruin the movie at all. So, Kevin, go ahead. You're
the question my wife had was when the legs grow back, how come they don't grow back with the scar or without the scars?
Because the process, he was seared in the process, and the searing was part of the process. And it's the only part that is it's the searing. I know if he could heal himself, then we have no problem. And he's beautiful and he doesn't go hunt Francis down and try and kill him because he feels like he can't, you know, Vanessa won't like him, but no, I can explain this more in depth if I go back to my notes, Kevin. Yeah. I don't have them in front of me.
This is my wife's question, not mine.
No, the short answer is the process that made him cannot be undone, but the after effect of the process is always in full effect.
Interesting.
He will always come back with that
scar.
What's it called? That coat of paint. That's not going anywhere.
Okay.
Let me get one in, Rob. Are there mutants that we might recognize in the icebox sequence who don't get named?
You know what? I thought there were that all that stuff was being filmed when I was on set. And you know that there was so many of them in those yellow jumpsuits. And I'm telling you, when they would take a break or they would go have meals together and they would wander through like the sound stages, I got to be honest, man, I was creeped out. I'm like, that guy's going to jump me. That guy's going to jump me. Hey, look, I mean, those guys were really, and men and women were really great. They were committed, but I did not recognize anyone outside of, as we can now say, spoiler, Juggernaut and Black Tom.
Gotcha. Mm. Very cool.
I'm gonna add this real quick, and I hope they don't get mad at me. I've talked to David about it. The movie's out. There is a completely different sequence with Black Tom that they filmed. I was there. I watched it. I will not spoil that sequence. That what you see in the film is not what I saw the day I was there. And I got to tell you, I think it's one of the best. It's an extended action sequence between himself and Deadpool. It didn't make the cut. When I saw the movie in February, I asked David and they said, yeah, we just thought for time purposes, we just went in another direction. But I there is no way on God's green earth they're not putting that on the DVD. But,
awesome.
But Black Tom and Deadpool had an extended fisticuffs. And I will not go further than that on the convoy. And it's awesome. And you'll see. When you see it, I can't go any further. It's great.
He does get dismissed pretty quickly. He gets dismissed faster than I thought he would.
And then David Leitch is in the convoy too. You see his cameo? David Leitch is on it. That was so cool.
With his mullet? With his mullet? I love it.
That was awesome.
He looks great.
Rob, I'm going to ask this next question. Once again, reinforcing that we're talking spoilers. But I'm also going to phrase it in such a way so that my fiance, who is in the room, doesn't have it spoiled for her because she hasn't had a chance to see the movie yet. There's a particular cameo that we see within the X-Force who runs into some power lines, and the entire theater erupted whenever we saw who this particular person was. I'll let Kevin and Sean say the name out loud since you can't hear them.
He plays Vanisher. We can say that.
Yes.
He plays Vanisher.
Yes. What's the story behind how you guys ended up getting him on set, and is there a chance that potentially, because of the way the film ended undoing everything, could we see more of him in the future?
Those are all, I know... whatever with him in the future is way above my pay grade. But I know that as some of your viewers won't know, and I know Kevin has pointed out to his viewership, I've watched this weekend, and it's safe to say David Leitch got his start as Brad Pitt's stunt double. They have a friendship that extends many years. in the first cut in February, that was not in there. I mean, here's the great thing. The battle on the convoy where Cable is shooting Deadpool at close range and he's cutting the bullets, that is added. That was added in the reshoots. And I just want, if we could, you know, it'd be awesome if at the end of this, people would understand that reshoots are not problematic.
Right.
They had tested the movie. By the time David showed me the cut, the movie had gotten a 96. I was there at the end of Deadpool 1 in the lobby in December of 2015 when they had gotten up into the high 80s, and I was at the last test screening. And this will be a chapter in my book. Ryan was not there at that last screening, but everyone else was. And Ryan emailed me that night in December and said, "Rob, I want your take." And I said, "Oh, I'll give you my take." And he said to me, "You didn't write me a take. You wrote me a phone book." Because it was the way the drama played out that night. The audience wasn't giving audible reactions, and everyone assumed that the score was actually going to go down. I'm going to cut to the end after the focus groups. People had already filled out their cards. The president of Fox called everybody together and said, "Guys, we've gotten the highest score in the history of Fox. This beat Avatar. We have a 92.
Wow.
And everybody jumped. I mean, Rhett Reese hugged me. Rhett is very reserved.
He is.
And he blurted something about Zombieland and its test score as he hugged me that I can't quite recall. But it was just like the emotion, the excitement, and everybody was thrilled. Everybody was thrilled. You have to know that when David Leitch showed me the cut in February, the movie had already scored 96. It had gotten 96 twice, but they were going to test it one more time, but they wanted to add in what the audiences had told them. And what the audiences had told them in two test screenings was, "We want more Domino, we want more Cable." Ryan had emailed me and said, "Hey buddy, you're gonna love hearing how much people love Cable and Domino. We're going to put more of them in." So that extended, there's Domino's action in that convoy scene was extended, and Cable and Deadpool, that little sequence they have, was a product of reshoots because they wanted to give people more. What I wish fandom would understand, sometimes the reshoots are to refine what is already great.
Right, exactly.
Because these studios now, they get it. They know what they're doing. They get the process. And I'm telling you, Domino's role in the movie, I can tell you, I won't spoil them. Zazie told me every little bit she added. And I mean, over the time you go, man, all those little added bits did add up to a significant chunk for her because the audiences loved her. They just loved her. So going back to The Vanisher, I am 100% certain they told me he was a reshoot added. And I think probably something that, you know, they probably done on the Fox lot, probably done not in Vancouver. And I know the first time I saw it with people, they literally flipped out. I mean, it's a shock, right? Isn't it a shock?
Yeah, literally a shock.
Literally.
Oh, there you go.
Thank you for letting me awkwardly ask that question because I don't want to ruin it for my fiance who's on the other side of the condo right now.
I got it.
So Rob, I think this question's already been answered, but we're gonna move on to Sean's question real quick. But you don't even have to go into full detail on this, but we were just wondering yes or no with the ending credit scene and the idea of him going back and doing what he does.
Yeah.
Does that mean that Vanessa and all those characters, Peter and everybody, are all still really alive?
I believe, from what I understand, that Vanessa is alive with great certainty. And I'm gonna tell you guys, let's give a shout out to Morena.
Yeah.
She, in my opinion, holds both movies together.
Yeah.
Her chemistry with Ryan is the whole franchise is built on that.
Yeah.
And they took a risk. I know they wanted to test the movie as early as they did because they knew that what they were doing in the first 10 minutes with Vanessa was probably the most hot button thing that they were doing. So they wanted to see how people reacted to that. But no, Morena and Ryan, I believe she's going to be around. And I think so too. I know talking to Morena, she has ideas of, you know, what could happen next.
Can we say copycat? Is that a word we can throw around, Rob?
You can say it. I won't say it. that way I have plausible deniability, right? Yeah.
Okay.
Fair enough. All right, let me ask about a character who I know you love, and that is Shatterstar.
Yeah, so sure.
It's a fantastic joke. It's a really long setup for him to get, spoiler alert, he gets
demise, right.
killed immediately. Are you disappointed to see a character like that who you know has so much potential and introduces so many great wrinkles? Just
Here's the dilemma of being me, being Rob. It happens in politics too. I am a on the fence guy. I see both sides of every argument almost every single time out. I weigh them all very carefully. So the Shatterstar introduction and his can we call it his arc? His arc in the film. his all important arc in the film. I think when it was presented to me, I understood it. I got it, and I'm going to tell you why. The movie to me is about Cable, Domino, and Deadpool. They are the above the they're the above the title names. They're your stars. They're the characters that were the result of extensive casting, searches. I mean, if you only knew all the guys who tried to be Cable. I mean, that was the hottest role in Hollywood, and I'm so glad they got it right. But with Shatterstar, I also have a note from one of the producers that says, "Dude, we undid that timeline." You know, at the end of the credit. I mean, look, I believe everything in the movie has semi been undone. Even if you go, they only went back and featured spoiler. They only went back and featured Peter.
Right.
But you know, butterfly effect, man. If you touch the time stream, you're going to get different results.
Yeah.
So the great thing about it, and I know, you know, obviously I did an appearance, a couple appearances this last weekend, and have gotten to know Louis Tan, and he's also on Into the Badlands. They have a great actor there. They have a great physical presence and actor. But here's the deal. If we never see Shatterstar again, you know, the franchise is about Deadpool, now Cable, Domino preeminently, and as it should be. I mean, the Avengers rotates around the two Chrises and Downey Jr. Everyone else is on the carousel with them, but they're the engine that drives everything. And I feel the same way about this movie. But look, I thought it was funny. I mean, that's the thing.
Yeah.
I'm like, how am I so okay with this? The only problem, Sean, is I was told to say nothing. Do not reveal. And I'm like, I'm good with Fox. Fox treats me great. I'm not going to say anything. Then they kind of glimpsed him in one of the trailers and they said, Rob, still say nothing. So now I have an entire internet coming at me. Was that Shatterstar? Was that? Say nothing, Rob. And so then I'm cool. I'm signed on. I'm saying nothing. My wife and I were on the couch. We're watching the NBA playoffs. In between one of the games, the commercial comes on. Cut to, I'm Shatterstar. What? Wait. the embargo's broke? So now we can talk Shatterstar? So I'm like, I just go, oh boy. And trust me, I have been erasing comments off all my social medias now for 4 days. You would say that there is perhaps a contingent that's not very happy. And then I get asked, how can you condone this? And I go, guys, here's the deal, man. There's always the comics and the toys and all these other ways that this world, that these characters exist.
Sure. It's also a joke.
Yeah. And you know, in the David, who, guys, help me out. Who made the three Batman films that everybody loves so much?
Christopher Nolan.
In Christopher Nolan's Batman universe, Ra's al Ghul trained Batman.
Yeah.
In that universe only, not in the comics.
Right.
Movies, I just divorce them. Movies, comics, they're different.
Separate.
Shatterstar, it was great seeing him. It was fun.
That's awesome. Very cool.
Jake, you're up, buddy.
Yeah. So the next question I'm going to ask, kind of knowing that you probably won't be able to answer, but it's keeping me up at night, so I have to ask it. A lot of publicity around a Disney joke that was cut from the film.
Tell me about that. No. I have not read about it. I see the headlines, but I haven't had time.
Oh, then that doesn't give me much hope for my question. But the question being that because of the Disney-Fox merger, that there was a joke about Disney that was in the film that was cut out. not official, but some saying that it was cut out so as to not tick off Disney in case the merger ended up going through, which now it's looking like it's going to. Was just sort of curious as to whether or not, if you knew what the joke was, because that's the big question is, what was
the
joke?
I don't know. I know a lot of the jokes. Like I said, I saw a lot of stuff that didn't make it into the film, some really rich material. I don't know this particular joke, but I got to be honest with you. I'm curious. I just don't think Fox cares. If it was cut, I don't know why it was cut. Maybe it was Ryan's decision. I really am operating in the dark here, but I don't. The Fox that I know does not care about the merger as it exists right now. They moved this movie right in between Avengers and Han Solo in what was a very controversial move. They don't care. They're pretty reckless. I like it about them. They're feeling more rogue than ever. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is it'll be really interesting with Deadpool 2 going into the Memorial Day weekend. I mean, I'm very excited. I think it's going to do bonkers business. Look, yeah. Solo will win the weekend. I want to see Solo. I grew up. I saw Star Wars 9 years old, 1977. Saw it 35 times that year. That summer alone, it was my babysitter. My parents were like, "See you on set. We'll see you at the end of Saturday. We'll see you at the end of Sunday." You know. So anyway, we all had that experience. It's what bonds all of us. But the thing is that. That, you know, a giant holiday frame like this plays to multiple movies. Yeah. And I think Deadpool is going to do extremely well, which is why they did what they did. They wanted to get it in front of Memorial Day. So I just don't think Fox cares. I may be reading the room wrong. I just don't think they care.
Rob, as a quick follow-up to that, and I know Kevin has a question after that. Because you've now established Deadpool in two movies – and there's a hilarious Dark Phoenix cameo, you know, of the X-Men team. That's the first time that I actually guffawed out loud in the movie when
they
all showed up.
Me too. Me too.
Hilarious. Hilarious scene. Do you want to see your baby in the MCU? Is that important to you?
If it's, I'll be honest. So do I want to see Deadpool in the MCU only if Ryan calls the shots? I don't care. Like, I already told you guys I'm 50 years old, or I'm going to say it again because I love saying it. My kids hate hearing it. They go, "Dad, if you say you're 50, I love it. I'm 50. I made it to 50. Here's the deal. I just don't care. Yeah. If what I say gets me in trouble, if Ryan is not the guy who is helming that ship, I don't, who cares? Right. Like, if Ryan is given everything he deserves and they say you can do your own thing over here under Disney, and let's say that goes through. So now I cannot imagine a world where the reaction, if on stage, let's say a Hall H, let's see a D23, clearly one of the places this will happen, Ryan coming out as Josh did last year. Because, man, last July or late June, my feed blew up. D23, Brolin comes out with the assembled cast of Infinity War, but he looks like Cable. And this is what the internet said for like five. Oh, my gosh. Brolin as Cable is there promoting Thanos. Holy. And he always buffed, and you could see everyone going, "Brolin, what happened to you? You're like, you're so ridiculously jacked." Can you imagine that same scene? Ryan walking out to shake hands with Downey Jr. Yeah. I mean, I think the world would go bazonkers. I mean, look, seeing him, having him interact with them, I think is next level $1 billion. I don't know how that doesn't work out spectacularly well, but I'm going to go back. I really believe Ryan, who has invested so much of himself in both movies, and people don't understand, he is all but directing, you know, these movies. This sequel, he poured everything he could into it. And I just think I don't know that. And the thing is, you look at Marvel and there's really only been one captain of that ship. So I would hope that they go, "Ryan, you have your own fleet of ships. Mm-hmm. They're right over here. We have the Santa Maria and you have whatever, the SS Deadpool." So
awesome.
You know, Rob, when I talked to you on the carpet in New York, we discussed and I hadn't seen the film until that night, about the joke about you. Now, in the initial film, the first movie, they had your name in the opening credits, that awesome slow-mo thing Tim Miller did. Yeah. And then in this movie, they make a joke about – your ability to draw feet as a comic book artist.
Sure.
Can you talk about how that came about? You mentioned Ryan called you up to make sure you're okay with it. What is the context there? I never knew there was a thing about feet.
So Kevin, here's the thing. The three things that I have co-opted in the comic book world, I created pouches. They did not exist before me. SWAT and army men and police officers, they never had them. They did not exist. I own pouches. I created them. Not true, but fans, next thing, I can't draw feet. I am the only person to ever obscure them. Frank Frazetta didn't do it. Mike Mignola didn't do it. Silvestri, Jim Lee, nobody. It's me. So feet, pouches, and then there's something else I can't think of, but at least those are the things that I own. And here's the deal. In that joke, you got to understand that joke about feet is a joke inside a joke because Deadpool is making fun of Domino's luck power because he thinks it's a ridiculous idea. And I told Ryan that when I was at Marvel, Domino, I always loved playing the game Domino's. That's why she is black and white. And those are her only two color schemes because she reflected an actual domino. And I used to love playing dominoes because I'd build them out. I'd spend an hour building a trail and then you don't know which way it's going to break. So it comes down to chance and luck and, you know, probabilities.
Yeah.
So I called up Marvel. I said, hey, I'm also introducing this character named Domino. Well, what'd she do? I said, she's lucky. All right, cool. Go with it. That's cool. And I go, that's it. I had a full green light for anything. I never got, after Cable's success and then Deadpool, Domino was, whatever. So I told Ryan, it's funny that you are, you know, that you say all this stuff about luck, because when I was pitching it to Marvel, I didn't think they were going to buy it because it does sound ridiculous. What is a luck power exactly? She changes probabilities is probably how I, you know, said it. But long story short, Deadpool is mocking her. And it's my favorite sequence, Kevin. He's saying how uncinematic her power is, as it's the most cinematic moment in she lands directly in the truck, in the chair. All of the cars are exploding around her. That one overhead shot where it's flying over her head. It couldn't be more cinematic, as he's saying, those powers aren't cinematic. And then he's like, what kind of cracked out coke? So Ryan says, hey, dude, is this line cool? I just want to learn it by you. I said, Ryan, I love it. I love taking the piss out of things. And here's the deal. My kids, I have three teenagers, 14, 15, and 18. They take the piss out of me all day long. All I do is get mocked and diminished because they're teenagers and I'm their dad. And they talk shit to me all day long. So I said, why wouldn't my characters talk shit to me too? And Kevin, I honestly, it was a badge of honor. I love it. I love that it's there. I totally dig it. But I love that it's inside it. Like Deadpool is running multiple commentaries. Her powers are stupid. And then what kind of idiot, me, comes up with stupid powers that shouldn't be working, but as we're saying this, are working spectacularly. She's the best part of the movie. I'm sorry, Ryan and Josh, I love you. I love you both. Zazie kills it.
Yeah.
She owns.
Yeah, she really does. All right, allow me the opportunity to get a little bit crazy with theory speculation.
Okay.
We don't hear a whole heck of a lot in the movie about Cable's wife beyond the fact that her sense of humor reminds her a bit about Wade. And Wade goes back and saves Vanessa and says they're going to name their baby Cher. Does that baby somehow continue to the lineage of Cable and potentially maybe even be Cable's wife?
Whoa, dude, way above my pay grade. Sean, congratulations. That's better than the Avengers theory. Holy. Wow. See, that's the thing. See, here's the deal. Let's go back to teenagers. I don't have time. I don't even have time to speculate. That's really good. Sean, I gotta. We're going to tap right here. I'm going to tap you. That's a really good one. That's a good one.
Thank you. Thank you.
You know, I love my the thing about Cable that I dig is, and this, you know, I was at K-Rock last week. It's a local station out here in LA, and I was doing promotions for the movie. And the manager, before I went on, he turned to me and he said, hey, I saw Deadpool the movie. He said, hey, what's up with Cable? What's his story? I just encountered him for the first time. And what's up with Domino? And you understand, to a guy like me, that's thrilling. That's thrilling. They're now encountering him. They want to know more. So I told him, look, you actually encountered Cable the way the audience in comics did. He's a man of mystery. What's his story? What's behind this? And because just like Wolverine, you got to understand, the reason he was so popular in the comics was his rich backstory that they took years to unfold. I followed the same thing with Cable. The biggest key reveal in Cable's character didn't come for 2 years. We waited 2 years. I waited 2 years to tell you. I love that he arrives in the Deadpool movie with very little backstory, with very little kind of for you to adjust. It's just he's there. He says, "I'm Cable. I'm here for the kids." You know, I mean, and they're
it's a good rolling.
I can do a better one. I just got to work up to it. It's so good. He told me. He said, "I love playing this character, Rob. I love it." And I'm like, "Good, because we want to see you again many times." No, I just think in the comics he entered the picture in a fortified citadel, battling a bunch of soldiers trying to get to his target. In the movie, he enters a fortified citadel. I mean, I'm like, this is there are so many nods to the comic book. There's a lot of X-Force 3 in this comic, a lot of X-Force 3 and 4, a lot of New Mutants 87. This comic is rich, and because of Ryan, the writers, Rhett and Paul, David, Simon Kinberg, the book really reflects so strongly. Fans tell me all the time how they think this is one of the most faithful comic book adaptations, you know, consistently now through two movies. But, dude, what they do with that was – that is weird. If he's somehow related to Deadpool, I may have to – jump out of a helicopter, but I'm not sure I'm ready for that one, Sean. But good theory.
Thank
again,
you.
I just, all right, I love
I'll take
it. There, I think that you could. I think there's a lot of Cable story to tell, and I hope they take their time.
Good. You know, Rob, Jake, are you next or who's
no?
Next?
It's all you, brother.
Last right, one, Kevin, and then we're gonna give Rob a break, and we're gonna dive into David Fincher's movies, and Rob can take a breath and join the conversation.
Okay.
And he's been.
I
great.
Love it, guys.
With the first Deadpool, obviously Stan Lee was in the strip club.
Yeah,
that was a great cameo. I think that's probably my favorite Stan Lee cameo. It was just such
mine too.
Perfect. It was so good. in Deadpool 2, he's just on a side of a building as an artist painting drawing. It was something that I know we know what's going on in the news with Stan Lee. Did it have anything to do with him not being in the film because of his health or what happened there?
No, I can tell you, I actually know a lot about this. And it's really unfortunately it's super boring. It just came down. I know the 3 days that Stan was scheduled, then rescheduled, then rescheduled. He just had a very busy, packed schedule. And then I know, I can tell you, maybe even the Deadpool people will find out for this, because I know all of Stan's people up until when they weren't his people anymore a few months ago. But during this time, they very much wanted to get him to Deadpool.
Yeah.
The production shifted some dates. He couldn't make the first one. The rescheduled date for Stan to shoot his cameo in Deadpool was the day they needed him on set for the Vanity Fair all Marvel character photo shoot. So if you're Stan, I know he wanted to be in Deadpool. He did want to make that.
What was the scene? Do you know the scene he was going to do?
I don't want to say what the scene was. I just know he was absolutely there. He was on the books. And he ended up having to be with his genuine creations that really, I mean, a really seminal photo event. So I know that they were trying to make it work down to the last minute, but they just couldn't be there and then fly there in Atlanta because it was a 2-day commitment. I know then there was talk of rescheduling him back in Southern California, but the thing you guys gotta understand is Stan has been very sick on and off.
Yeah.
Outside of all the insanity that's been created. And I know that his health definitely in the last rescheduling, but in the two summer slots, it was just a scheduling issue. First production, then Stan's schedule couldn't do it. And again, and I just want your viewers to know, because I don't want them to think poorly of the production on any level whatsoever. The production also asked me to return and be in a brief cameo, and I just didn't care. I declined. I said, I just want to be there on set. I'm a horrible actor. My buddies like Robert Kirkman from The Walking Dead and Mark Miller of Kingsman, they're not in their movies. And I think like rather than try and chase some Stan Lee cameo, you know, that no one's ever going to catch, I'm just happy to show up and witness it and be around and talk to Ryan and talk to Brolin. But the Stan thing, again, it's really boring why he didn't show up, but it came down to
scheduling. I was just curious. No, I'm
telling you the Vanity Fair all Marvel Universe photo is the number one reason he's not in the movie.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
That's incredible. Where else are you guys going to get Deadpool 2 insight like this? the week after the movie opens. Rob is incredible. And let's let Rob take a drink of water and refresh. And we will transition from Deadpool 2 spoiler talk to our game this week. Which
should I drink it? Should I drink it out of this?
Of course, you should, Rob. You should drink
it. Better not be water. Okay.
All right, this week's game. This week's game is hashtag Fincher Blend, where we are going to debate the best films of David Fincher. And we've been talking on social media leading up into this week's show about how impossible this has been. The hard ones up until now have been so far. Spielberg was really, really difficult.
Yes.
What other one was really hard? I don't know. Which ones will we struggle with?
Kubrick, Spielberg, Nolan.
Kubrick was easy. John Williams was easy.
Williams was not easy. I wrestled
Tom Hanks was
for
tough.
A while. Tom Hanks, Hanks was a tough was, one. So anyway, yeah. we have David Fincher, and we have an order, which makes me suggest that we don't all have the same pick, so I'm happy about that. And Kevin, you will be thrilled to know that you get to go first.
Oh, really?
Well, Rob, here's how it works. So we don't reveal our pick, but the rest of us get to guess what we think the other person, what we think they chose. So Kevin's in the hopper first.
Sean, can I guess? So I get to guess?
You get to guess what you think Kevin picked, okay. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So go ahead. You can guess. Rob, you start us off and you guess what you think Kevin picked for Fincher.
Zodiac.
Okay. Good call. Jake?
Yeah, he totally picked Zodiac.
Man, I don't know. He says it's his best film, but he doesn't really like it as much.
Look at his eyes. His eyes say Zodiac Killer if I ever saw it.
Yeah, you're right. It's probably Zodiac. All right, I'll say that too.
Yeah, you guys are all right. I mean, like,
because I looked in your eyes, Kevin.
Here, the thing about Zodiac, I think it's the best film he's ever made from a filmmaking standpoint, a storytelling standpoint. It's a movie I'll never watch again. Oddly enough, it's so great, rewatchable. I can't handle it. It's too brutal. The beach stabbing scene is horrific to watch. Yeah, I mean, Rob knows what I'm talking about. That scene is just horrifying. It's interesting. As I sat in that theater, I watched it, and I've been watching Fincher's work since I was in high school. I mean, Fight Club, Seven. Seven was a next choice for me. Fight Club, I was debating in my mind, but I think just from a filmmaking standpoint, a storytelling standpoint, a film that stayed with me more than any of his films was Zodiac. Mm. And I think a lot of it had to do with the idea that we never found out who the killer really was in real life. The movie kind of lent you towards a certain subject and it leaves it open for you. To me, the movie felt like an extension as to what people were going through at that time. And when you left the theater, that feeling of uncertainty and unease stayed with you as if the people were living in that time were dealing with that murder storyline as well. So I just think that the performances, I mean, Gyllenhaal, you know, who
that
else?
That cast. It's Downey Ruffalo, Jr. Downey, Gyllenhaal, Chloe, Sevigny.
It truly is amazing. It's a masterpiece. I mean, and it's weird.
It is a masterpiece. It's my pick, by the way.
If I'm looking at a bunch of Blu-rays of Fincher's movie, like I'm gonna put probably Fight Club on more than anything else because it's just so interestingly to watch and there's so many things to pick up on. But I think Zodiac at the end of the day is the best movie he ever made, and it's a movie I'll probably will never watch ever again. It's just too hard to watch.
Okay, you need to change that. By the way, I just need to throw in here. You need to watch it again, please. I've watched it multiple times.
I've seen it twice. It's just hard to watch, man. It's just so hard to watch. That beach scene, I have never felt stabbing in my stomach more than that scene ever in my life. And I'm gonna
expand on that when I get to me.
Okay.
It's also an amazing movie about how your obsessions can just go unfulfilled. Like Gyllenhaal's 100% character is obsessed with the case. And
everybody's borderline
ruins his life, and he never gets the answer that he wants.
It's just a genuinely, perfectly told story. That's what it is.
As you already said, we need to point out it has a great Marvel cast of characters: Iron Man, Hulk, and now Mysterio.
Yes. Yes. All right. So, Rob, why did you choose? Why don't you tell us why you chose Zodiac?
Yeah, I'm sorry I ruined the guessing game. I'm stupid. I'm tired. Here's the deal. The long and the short of it is Kevin hit it on the nose. First of all, I think it's paced magnificently. The reveals and the slow, you feel Gyllenhaal going into descent. But I have a theory that I've always just gone by. Not a theory, but a condition. If you can scare me to my bones in broad daylight, when they look up and he's there just among the trees, it I'm still scared.
Yeah.
what Kevin said, the broad daylight scene, if you can, in the middle of a beautiful day on a lake, scare the bejesus out of me. But it's more than that. I mean, that is the shock. But like you said, I think one of you, Sean, you might have said, the fact that the case has never been solved and just the way the movie ends also, and Gyllenhaal knows that's the guy. And we feel in our bones, that's the guy. And there's that entire scene with he's the voice actor. He did, I think, some stuff in Roger Rabbit, but he goes to visit him in his downstairs library, and you think, Gyllenhaal's getting jacked right now.
Yeah. What's the line that he says where he says, not many people in California have basements? And that's when you go, crap.
Yes. Like Kevin said, the mastery of suspense is Fincher at his finest. Yeah. So anyway, go ahead. You guys go.
All right.
Or it's a horrifying movie.
Jake, I'm told you are next. So I'm all next. Get to guess Jake's pick. Don't say anything.
Yeah. Okay.
Don't say anything. Right. Don't say anything. Kevin, start. What did Jake pick?
I'm going to go with Seven. Because I think, and that's primarily the fact that Jake and I constantly make this joke about what's in the box. And I think that, I think that's probably, what's in the box? I mean, by the way, is there a better crying scene in a movie than the way Brad, nobody cries better than Brad Pitt in Seven. Nobody. I mean, he does that, he's like. Like, looks away, like, stop. All right, that's my guess. Seven it's for absurd. Jake.
All right, I am going to actually guess that Jake picked The Social Network. Because I think that Jake has a signed copy of Aaron Sorkin's screenplay for potentially The Social Network. Is it The Social Network? Is that what he signed?
No, actually, Kevin was right. It's actually, my pick is Seven. And here's why, and here's what's interesting about Fincher Blend is that I wouldn't argue against anyone's pick. Kevin, by no means would I argue against Zodiac, but it is absolutely fantastic. But you mentioned something really interesting, and it's that you wouldn't watch Zodiac again. And whenever I was trying to pick, I had three Fincher movies I was choosing from, and all of them I would have argued had perfect direction. All of them had beautifully written screenplays, and all of them just had these really tense, incredible tight performances. So I had to try to figure out what's the X factor that's going to tip one for me. And I think it's a little bit further down on the list, but rewatchability has to be, I think, a factor. And yeah. I think when they were all tied up, I would sit and watch Seven on a loop before I would watch Zodiac. And I just think that...
I don't know how you could possibly watch Seven on a loop.
I think Seven is just so tight. God. And it's just like a really quick run that you just sort of kind of try to bang out in like 2 hours and you feel really good about it. And what I love about it is that it does so much and it convinces you that it does something without actually doing. And that's actually being violent. I know a lot of people that say, oh, it's one of the most violent films of all time.
It's
which
not.
I always tell them, no, it's not. Yeah. You don't see John Doe kill anyone. Very much like people that swear that you can see the needle going to Uma Thurman's chest in Pulp Fiction. You can't. But great filmmaking makes you think that you can. Everyone thinks that you see John Doe do all the, you know. In fact, the only murder you see is of John Doe.
Yeah.
And I just think it's so incredibly well done. I think Fincher, the fact that he created this, you never find out what city you're in. It's in this really weird, like, New York City that's somehow surrounded by desert. It's like this
Those
fictional
buildings.
World. It's just
assume it's
really
San Francisco.
Haunting. I don't know. They never say.
Yeah. Have you guys ever paused the final scene when they show
Oh, well, you see the
head?
Yeah, you see the head. But it's
you,
not.
You think it's not
it's
her
just
head.
Her. It's just her.
It's just her. Photo. Right, yeah. You like the way Fincher edits that. You think you're looking at her severed head. It's actually just a shot of her, like in a happy moment.
No,
like, pause it when you watch Seven again. Pause it on that frame. It's
because that's when he
just,
starts to cry. Because that's what he's thinking of. Yeah, so
it's a normal photo of her.
I was between Social Network, Zodiac, and Seven. They were all kind of had the very similar qualities in terms of what defines a best. And the X factor for me was the fact that Seven to me just has a much more watchability factor, which normally doesn't matter. But when I had to pick between the three, I'd much rather watch Seven over. I mean, guys, look, I have a signed copy of Social Network. I'd much rather watch. You know, I'd much rather watch Seven before I would watch Social Network or Zodiac again.
I couldn't watch Seven again. I mean, Seven is a brilliant film. It's similarly with Zodiac. I'd put Seven on, no question, again, over Zodiac. But Seven, again, there's another moment in that film that just, I had nightmares, and it's the lust moment with the story. And again, like Jake said, it's almost like the shark in Jaws. It's what you don't see that scares the crap out of you. And the imagery of, Like, not showing the
pictures.
Knife.
Oh, remember, like, you almost have to sort of, like, look at the screen and see what the pictures are. And it's I'm a big fan of bad guys winning. And I think that's maybe the best case of a bad guy winning in cinema history.
I agree. Yep. I agree.
All right. I am last. You guys get to guess.
I think you chose Social Network.
Fight Club.
I'm going to go. What's Rob say? Fight Club?
Rob said Fight Club.
I'm going to go 7 as well.
Kevin is correct. I also went 7. Also went 7. And here's why. So this is what, and Rob, we have this conversation whenever we play this game. There's a huge difference between best and your favorite, right? Like, you automatically want to defer to what your favorite is, but it might not be the best. And so when trying to figure out what defines a David Fincher movie, he doesn't always do this, but I think Fincher loves police procedurals. I think he loves getting into an investigation, whether it's Gone Girl, whether it's...
Mindhunters.
Mindhunters.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Oh,
brilliant.
Whether it's his adaptation of Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, he loves getting into a police procedural. And I think 7 is his leanest and meanest interpretation of that type of movie. I think I almost went Social Network and obviously Zodiac. Jesus, of course, Zodiac. Which is the ultimate police procedural movie. The thing about Social Network, as good as it is, it's directed beautifully, but a lot of it is Sorkin. You know, it's that dialogue. It's that dialogue. And so, and just the reveal of John Doe in 7 is brilliant. The interplay of the two cops is brilliant. It almost takes like the buddy cop formula, but then strips all the comedy out of it and puts you in this position with these two partners. It's such a trope, you know, the retiring detective and the young pup who's at his heels. And it just, it makes the best version of that type of story. And yeah, I mean, we joke about what's in the box because it's the ending that and Usual Suspects came out around the same time, I remember. And each of those had endings that just were.
Both Kevin Spacey endings.
Both Kevin Spacey endings, and they both just blew audiences away.
You touched on it, and Kevin touched on it, Jake, you touched on it too. I mean, here's the bottom line. And I actually, just listening to all you guys, Fincher has maybe, I'm thinking this now, I'm trying to digest it. I mean, obviously I had to put it up against guys like Kubrick and Spielberg, but he has, like, there's nothing I would change in Zodiac. There's nothing I would change in 7. They are perfect films.
Yeah.
They are flawless. When you go, oh, it should have had this. We all walk out of movies and go, oh, it could have, it should have, it, you know. He has these perfectly constructed films that I mean, Zodiac, again, for me, I guess there was more maybe surprises, tension, whatever, but 7 is a perfect movie. It's a perfect, it is a flawless film from beginning to end. And now that I think of it, he may have more than anybody. He may have actually more movies that are like flawless
maybe him and Tarantino, maybe. I'm trying to, it's funny because I think we can all agree Fincher's classics. He probably has 5 of them, right? So we go Fight Club, 7, Zodiac,
Gone Girl is a
flawless movie.
Yes, I agree with you. Gone Girl is another one that was a really, really interesting, slow burn, but like meticulously directed. I remember, because we all know Fincher does a ton of takes of everything he does. But the one that blew my mind the most was the Neil Patrick there was a scene that happens on a bed where someone dies. What character dies?
Yeah, Neil Patrick Harris.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. So they did that, I want to say, over 30 times, and they had to redress the bed
beds. They had four beds on the set. So they would just keep moving from set to set.
And then they would put this weird ointment on their bodies so the fake blood didn't stain their skin so they could reshoot it. Right. And I was just like, people can make fun of Fincher all they want for the number of takes he does. I know he did record 99 takes on the opening of Social Network, which is fine. I know I remember hearing a story that Robert Downey Jr. did not particularly love working with him because of that realm of different takes. But I think the guy knows what he's looking for, and he knows what he wants, and it works. I mean, I can't think of a bad. And everyone talks crap about Alien 3. I did not hate Alien 3. It has problems, yes, but I don't hate that movie. I don't think he's made a bad movie. He's not made a bad film in my mind.
Aliens 3 problem is Alien and Aliens. It's actually competing against two masterpieces, which it holds up remarkably well. It's just not. It's the one time Fincher is up against two guys who their movies are crafted so brilliantly. But yeah, like you said, Aliens 3 is a great watch.
I'm it's an just, Aliens guy. I'm weird.
Dude, me too.
I mean, I'm with you, man, because I've always been, and it's funny because one's a horror film, one's an action movie, and I personally, you know, aside James Cameron's the reason I fell in love with cinema. I mean, Terminator 2 changed my life. It really did. So I want him to get away from the avatars and just go back. I know, Rob, you and I discussed this on Twitter. You're an Avatar guy.
Oh, huge. Don't even start with me, McCarthy. Don't even.
You're on the wrong podcast, dude.
I enjoyed watching everybody eat their shit over Avatar. I remember there is a prominent comic book writer. A prominent comic book writer who came out of a Thursday night preview and mocked it. Oh yeah, dragons versus robots. Oh, this is gonna tank. And I just, every week I wanted to say, how you feel, dumb shit? Like, how's that feel? Having Cameron piss down your throat. Like, don't underestimate, dude. And I'm invested in that. I love
you're,
the journey.
Are you all in on the new ones? You're all in? You can't wait for these?
I will not subscribe to this new. Dude, you guys are all batshit crazy. I have kids. They love those. You are missing out on the fact that my kids were 5 and 6 and 9, and they remember those movies. You better believe they'll be first in line. You better believe that they had a resonance with those people. I love, have you looked at the amount of business that movie did? Because I don't like saying money. It's
$2.7 billion. But, dollars, yeah. Yeah.
Nothing's shaking that anytime soon, Infinity War. I thought the closest anyone would get was them. Hi, we have 30 Marvel characters and Thanos. And, you know, Cameron's sitting there going, ain't going to cut it.
Rob, I'm going to play devil's advocate, and I'm going to say that very rarely does box office and quality equate to the same thing.
No. That's why I said business. No.
Business.
Here's the thing, Jake, people went back again and again and again and again and again. You cannot underestimate. That movie was number one for 2 months. That is not, is no, unless he is some wizard-level sorcerer who casts spells on everyone, there is something in, when those movies come out, and I think everybody forgets, man, when you see Sully amass his armies, join the tribes, and they meet in the sky on those asteroids, I'm getting the goosebumps. Cameron is a freaking wizard.
And Rob, you know what it is? Rob, you know what's even more amazing? This is the most amazing box office stat ever. Do you know who James Cameron beat to take the top crown with Avatar?
Himself.
He beat himself.
Exactly. Still sitting at number one and two saying,
that's insane.
And dude, Kevin, I'm going to tell you, because you're a young pup. You're all young pups. In 1997, 96, so you remember they moved. They moved. What percentage am I going to blink? If I blink out, it's because my iPad died. Gotcha. Here's the deal. 1990, they moved from Christmas 96 to they moved from summer 96
for
to
Titanic.
Christmas 96, Titanic.
Yeah.
And in the Hollywood trades, out here in the physical Hollywood trades, there was no internet. Cover of Daily Variety, they had an iceberg at the top every day, and the boat moved closer to the iceberg, and it was Titanic watch. And the entire industry was betting on him tanking. Will Smith and I were selling a movie at the time, and we went to Bill Mechanic, the president of Fox's house, and he was literally miserable over the amount of money they were going to lose on Titanic. And every day, you want to talk about an industry. You want to know why he said I'm king of the world? Because he knew every day you people printed up trades with a boat getting closer to an iceberg, foreshadowing that I'm going to wipe out. And instead, I wiped you out.
Yep.
And
yeah.
No, dude, he is a samurai Jedi
Rob.
Master. And Jake, you and I are going to watch Avatar together.
Ross,
and you.
Let me say.
Can it be Fern Gully or Pocahontas when we do?
Those movies suck. That's the good version. The good version.
Rob, let me say one thing. All right, so James Cameron, and this I guess this will be a quote unquote unpopular opinion aspect of our show, but James Cameron is my favorite filmmaker in regards to the person that got me into this business. So I'm talking Abyss, T1, T2,
me too.
Aliens, Titanic,
True Lies.
Lies.
I'm James Cameron.
Yes.
I'm going to do a James Bond movie and not call it James Bond.
Thank you. I love True Lies. So you're talking to somebody who's obsessed with James Cameron.
Yep.
I admired what he did with Avatar. My problem
with
Avatar.
He had no influence on me, Kevin. He had no influence on me whatsoever. Okay, go ahead.
No, but, and I love the John Connor joke in Deadpool 2. But,
me too.
What's great about the Avatar debate, in my personal opinion. I know. But hear me out, Rob. Hear me out. So with Avatar, and I don't know if you agree with me or not, I think that he spent more time on the technology and what he was building to make than he did on the script. I just felt the script was lacking. I didn't particularly care for certain characters. I'm all in to see if he can improve on it in the second one. And listen, I am nobody. I know nothing. I mean,
no,
I
want to come. You're Kevin Dan McCarthy. You are Kevin. You have an opinion. You have a platform. Look, man, I am aware. This is perfect. I'm the lower square. I don't know how this is going to read when you guys edit this. I'm at the bottom. Nobody. Avatar now is, as Jake has framed it, a movie that no one respects. Everyone disrespects. I get it. Been there, done that myself. I would not underestimate him on any level. And here's the deal. I like Jake Sully's journey. I like his journey and how he. I watched it. I only vocalized it on Twitter because I had rewatched it on HBO that night, and I could not believe that I'm still as engaged. And I own that movie on every platform, every stinking new DVD they put out. Oh yeah, okay, here we go. Oh, 4K,
that's cool.
Boom. So yeah,
I think I'm knocking it. Like, the thing is, I don't think it's a bad movie. I just think it holds no place in pop culture, which is, I think, in the sense that, like, I don't often hear people quoting it. By no means do I think it's a bad movie. I think what he did on the screen is magnificent and set ripple waves that we saw for the next part of a decade. I just think that for a movie that holds the number one spot on the box office, it's not like that Titanic. We're not getting on a boat and going to the front and screaming King of the World. There's no aspect in life where I find myself quoting Avatar and then everyone goes, oh, that's that quote from Avatar.
Okay.
Titanic being number one, I would understand that because Titanic is a great movie. And I think, but can we all at least agree that Deadpool 2 is better than Avatar? Please.
I would agree to that.
Can we please agree with that?
100%. Yes.
Oh, Rob, what are you doing? Rob's the one person that says no.
Okay. Good. Yes. We'll take it.
I mean, to be fair, they're all 20th Century Fox movies. So either way, they're sitting pretty right now.
I do agree. I said back when I had first seen the cut of Deadpool 2 and people asked me, and we already alluded to this, I only compared Deadpool 1 to Alien because Aliens was this much bigger movie. Where Deadpool 1, we all know it was made on a shoestring budget. People still, like $56 million is nothing in Hollywood. And I was there on those sets. They were derelict, empty warehouses, rundown bars. Kevin, when I got to Deadpool 2, and I saw, you mean we have two sound stages? Like, they're giant airport hangars, and there's two sets on each stage, and so cool. Two of them are running simultaneously.
Ah, I knew that was going to happen.
We lost it.
Oh, once he said his power, I knew that was going to happen. All
but
right.
Everything up to that was awesome. He's such a good guy.
Can I just say, too, is probably the best case of, if you're not watching us live and watching the Facebook video live, you missed out on a ton because Rob was doing a lot of stuff for the camera that, unfortunately, those listening on the podcast just through audio are missing out on.
All right,
but
let's wrap. Let's wrap. We have most of it. We have almost all of it. So we have to thank. We're all thanking Rob Liefeld for joining this episode of Real Blend. This was incredible. We had amazing Deadpool conversation. We had amazing David Fincher conversation. It transitioned into incredible James Cameron conversation. We got to get him back for a Cameron Blend whenever we end up doing it because I think he'd be amazing
Cameron
for that one.
Easy.
Rob is at Robert Liefeld. LIEFELD at Robert Liefeld on Twitter. Please give him a follow if you haven't already. And if you love Deadpool, why wouldn't you? He's incredible. He's an amazing guest. We're so happy that he joined us for this. Next week, we are going to do a special episode after Solo, and our hashtag is going to be, I think I mentioned this to Jake, we're going to do hashtag Star Wars Blend.
Star Wars Blend.
But here's the trick. You got to do you got to do the top three. You got to pick your top three Star Warses. Star Warses?
Star Wars.
Star Wars.
Star Y.
Thank you, StarWise. So drop your picks on Twitter using hashtag StarWarsBlend. Jake, as we wrap up, tell everybody where they can find you.
You can find me at Jake's Takes, or if you look up the most recent Harry Award winner,
yes.
You'll also find.
It's another reason you should be watching this on Facebook is that you can see Jake's amazing hair. Kevin also has award-worthy hair. Kevin, where can they find you?
You can find me at Avatar is not great on Twitter, and at Deadpool 2 is better than Solo on Twitter.
And because I'm the old man in the group losing my hair, I get no such award for this. I'm at Sean underscore O'Connell. Drop
you have
us
a wonderful
review.
Widow's peak, sir.
Thank you. On iTunes, on Spotify, on Google Play, on all those great places where you can get podcasts. We will be back next week where we are going to talk Solo in depth. We're going to try to have a guest for that one too. So tune in then. And thank you very much, everybody, for listening. Thank you, Rob, again. And we'll talk to you next week.
Dunkirk!
Yep.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.